Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays. This time I'm recording on a Thursday, and it has been a minute since I recorded. Been a whole lot of things going on. Really good, really, really intense, and the feeling is just density. Depth of value, but density is what I would say. This episode is titled Agile, the Good Parts, which... if you were in the software industry, I want to say around about 2012-ish, maybe more, that was the title of a very popular book called JavaScript, the Good Parts. And this is modeled on that in a few ways, mostly because JavaScript was something that people did not like in certain corners of the software industry. And this was kind of a book about, hey, there's good things in JavaScript. Around that time, JSON was invented, actually, ironically, by the author of that book, Douglas Crawford. He really advocated for JSON as a transaction format. XML was still incredibly dominant at that time. XML has some extensibility, hence the name, extensible markup language, that is still wonderful to have attributes you can place anywhere. However, the simplicity of JSON has proven itself to be incredibly valuable. And JavaScript, the Good Parts, was the book that kind of introduced the idea that there are JavaScript-y things. I was not, and am still not, a fan of the book. Kind of like I was not, and still am not, really a fan of Agile. But I'm going to talk about how my aversion to all of Agile has really bitten me, and the parts of it that I will bring back into my life. And I actually have. I've brought back a cyclical nature of continuously working systems and documentation as part of that cycle. Ironically, not a very agile-y thing to document a lot of stuff. But I'm going to talk about how wonderful it has been to realize that, oh, wow, my training's not all bad. As well as my reasoning for not being a huge fan of Douglas Crawford's book was very simply that I didn't feel like he included the good parts. To me, the magic of JavaScript has always been the closure system and the event queue. And I remember flipping through this book and realizing, you know, I think a better title would have been JavaScript, the Watered Down Parts, or possibly JavaScript, the Parts That Object-Oriented Developers Can Relate To. And the reason for that is that the compositional power of JavaScript with closures and the this context bound to events makes it one of the most flexible languages in a space you really need that, which is user interactivity. I'm going to talk a little bit about some user activity stuff that I wrote this week for Compare Basic for the new register login and newsletter signup page. And I'm going to go over basically what has happened, which is that Agile has a clear tenet of short-term window evaluation. And it at times has the byproduct of producing very low-quality systems because there's never really a vision of completion. Agile development is a project management philosophy that grew out of the software industry around the late 90s. They had like a manifesto that I'll talk about a little bit. And since then, it's kind of bled out, is my term, into other spaces like the business world. I hear a lot of things being discussed in the entrepreneurial communities I was part of about how, you know, agile, do lean, fail fast, and all these things that were not really actually ever part of agile, but they grew out of it. Things like user testing, where you quickly assemble a mock of some kind and ask a bunch of people. That was never officially part of agile, but it did grow out of it. And it's added to this kind of mindset of the popular opinion is true, which is not a direct correlation. And the idea that you can ask around and quickly get, you know, feedback from a lot of the population to do things rather than actual analysis, actual conviction. So while I have many, 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 many reasons for poking at Agile, and I felt like JavaScript, the Good Parts as a book should have been renamed JavaScript, the Mediocre Parts, I'm going to talk about what my journey has been like of the last 2 years of completely abandoning Agile. No short-term goals of any kind. I haven't had code reviews because I don't have someone working with me, but I mostly have basically just been a ship without a rudder. And so I'm going to bring some things back and I'll talk about what that looks like. So I'll start with a brief introduction of what has happened. So I've been a software engineer, mostly a front-end software engineer, and for the end of my career, I worked for two insurance companies, life insurance and car insurance. And there's something really interesting about these spaces, which is that the design aesthetic of the technology industry, software in particular, moved increasingly towards simplicity, either because there was a belief that's what people wanted, or because social media and search were the dominant industries of those times, and both of them are very ripe for excessive user simplicity, or because, I don't know, that's just what happened. But here's the interesting thing about insurance companies. It's not possible to make simplistic interfaces that delight users when you have to ask them 200 questions about their family medical history. It's not possible. Car insurance, not quite as much, but still a lot of questions. So I was constantly in companies that had a problem space that was very, I would say, I don't know, acidic towards the sort of general trend of things. And that led to very interesting solutions. How do we get people through minimalist interfaces when we actually are going to ask them tons and tons of things? And so a lot of the things that I was mostly on front-end teams, we were trying to figure out how to get people a delightful experience in the face of this massive complexity. And the way we usually did it was by coordinating the dependencies within the data questions elegantly and smoothly. For example, if you are filling out a life insurance application for yourself, every question starts with, do you? However, if you are filling it out for someone else, say possibly a child, it was not uncommon for people to buy life insurance policies for their kids as they were born. Then we would have to substitute the name of their child in the form. So then it would be, does Sam's grandmother have a history of, you know, whatever disease that would be have an impact on their life insurance premium? And so that kind of flexibility could get really weird if you have to say, does the subject this and that, and have the questions, you know, show up in an order that's confusing. And so the focus was not actually on minimalism. The focus was on smoothness. And what I've now developed with my sign-in form that I'm in testing now, I set the scripts up. It'll be really interesting to see what the reaction is to this. The sign-in register and newsletter sign-up form is all the same form. And there's a few questions that make the sections expand and collapse. Now, on the surface, this sounds horribly confusing. But what I find is that it's actually not that hard to do the considerate thing, which is to have the user click a radio button that says, you signing up for the newsletter. By the way, if you make an account, you have access to details that have only things that I can share privately, or things the crowdfunders have access to, or ongoing access to the labs program. And then once you click that you're interested in more than the newsletter, are you entering a password? Are you requesting a link to sign in? And would you like to create a new user? Are you a returning user? The reason for me talking about this smoothness now is because I feel like it's one of the things that we were all really working on in the middle of the 2010s that I want to bring back. And it's the idea of how to consolidate a problem to the user such that it's natural to talk through. And that has this really interesting background today with the rise of large language model AI, because my belief is that large language model AI as a majority impersonation technology doesn't really tick the boxes that it claims to, but the desire for it is very, very real. And the seeding of that desire is because programming things in a very staticky, you know, programmers write a bunch of code way, really did start to fall apart, in my opinion, around 2015, 2016. And while I think the desire to have more composable systems that are a bit more like a conversation than opening something from a file cabinet and filling it out with pen and paper, which is kind of how the internet was originally modeled, I think there's a sweet spot in there where you either have visual scripting, components that can be configured quickly together, so you still have that sort of conversational aspect when you talk to it with your team, but it doesn't really have to be large language model AI. And I think the sweet spot here is actually visual scripting. If you look at some of the developments that have happened with the use of Unreal Engine or the 3D render engines of every material system that I know of, from Blender, Maya, 3ds Max. I know the Arnold render engine is extensively, it's Autodesk's render, and then you have Cycles in Blender. And all of these are very complex numerical spaces that allow you to use them with bubbles. And I think that we are headed to an era where the way software is written has fundamentally changed. And I think that no code tools probably are the answer. It's just, I think the world's obsessed with the wrong no code tool right now. But on to my story about Agile, the good parts, which I'm probably procrastinating by talking about something else more interesting. So basically what's happened to me, or what I have done, because they're probably the same thing, is that about 2.5 years ago, I was laid off from one of those insurance companies. And I was able to find a few months of employment with a small company, but that didn't turn out to be the right thing. And so for the majority of 2023, I was unemployed. And I decided to start something, and I found out that what I was actually after was healing all of my wounds since all time, which has turned out to take forever. That's not surprising. But here's what is surprising. One of those wounds was the decrease in quality in the software teams I was working on. And one of the things I really, really took aim at was the Agile Management Framework. Now, for the last, I would say, 7 years of my career, maybe more, maybe like 10, Agile became synonymous with a version of Agile called Scrum. And Scrum is where every 2 weeks you have certain rituals. One is you have a daily meeting where you go over what you did the day before. And at the end of the two-week period, you have two ceremonies, is what they're called. The first meeting is a retrospective where you talk about what did or didn't happen. The other was where you plan the next 2 weeks. And there's a few things about these meetings that are wonderful and many things about them that are not. The problem with daily stand-up is that because it happens every day, most of the time there's nothing to report and people just make things up. The value is that you do have a daily check-in to objectively explain yourself. You see where things are going. Now, I'm a solopreneur, so my only real check-in is when I give an update on this podcast and I have a chance to feel like, what did I do these 2 weeks? But the retrospective meeting actually gets really interesting because people talk about their pain points, but also their accomplishments. And so there is this pressure to have something interesting to show. So what I've been doing the last 2.5 years, I had a solopreneur coding project. I received some donations for investment, which is wonderful. The crowdfunding has been inspiring, even though it hasn't been enough. And basically, I perceive the quality issues to be as a result of this two-week focus. So I said, throwing out the playbook, not going to do anything in a way other than build components as they are needed. And oftentimes what happens, because the Sneaker code base is so complex, is that I will change something that requires support from something else, and then I'll change that thing and that thing and that thing. And if I wrote out what I thought I was going to work on this week, it wouldn't be accurate at all. I'd be working on something else because the system has so many components that have overlapping features. And this feels a lot like life. I mean, I think most of us wake up in the morning and by the end of the day, we're like, whoa, didn't expect it to go like that. And there was a motive in Agile to kind of embrace the chaos of life, and that is wonderful. But one of the things that's really interesting is that Agile, being a cyclical nature, allows you to completely finish something and then stand back and assess it. And so what I've started doing is having a mandatory step, which is write documentation at the end of what I've done and publish something. And doing this on a clip has been so inspiring, because when I talk about what I'm doing, I get all this motivation and inspiration. It really does close the loop. And if I can't really explain something, it's not really done. So that part of Agile that focus on cycles is wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And I want to talk about why my perception of Agile has always been a little on the negative side. And I'm going to read the manifesto because it's talked about a lot. It goes like this. We're uncovering better ways of developing software by doing it and helping others do it. Through this work, we come to value individuals and interactions over process and tools, working software over comprehensive documentation, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, responding to change over following a plan. That is, while there is value in the items on the right, we value the items on the left more. Now, the very first time I read this, I felt the exact same way I do about it now, which is that this is some bullshit. And the first reason is that last line, while there's value in items on the right, we value items on the left. It's like, come on, you're going to water down the impact of what you're saying by basically just like, hey, you know, we're going to say a bunch of contradicting things and then just, you can't blame us because we just have, you know, a range of values. And the reality is that the way this was received was basically a short-term focus with very little accountability is the way to go. And I find these things so contradictory. I mean, individuals and interactions over processes and tools, we're software engineers. We're building processes and tools. That's what we do. And the irony is that over time, there's one piece of software that was used the most, which was Jira. And Jira is the most processy, toolsy thing. So I don't know if they meant that to happen indirectly, or if that's kind of like completely against Agile. I've heard a lot of people say, well, Agile would be great, just isn't really done well. And it's like, one of the reasons it wasn't done well is because humans are extreme creatures. And this is such a like balancing of things that wasn't going to scale. But here's the one that really gets me. Working software over comprehensive documentation. I got to say something. I learned a lot about the value of documentation when I worked in England in a slightly post-COVID company. They were really obsessed with documentation, and I really, really liked it, and I still really do. And if I were to highlight one thing that I've done wrong in the last 2 years, it is not write enough documentation. And my bar on documentation is really high. I have a new system out called Polyvinyl for Compare Basic, and you can see it on our website. There's a link to the code repo. And I try to write documentation that really, really makes sense. And I get really frustrated when I am trying to set up a system with documentation that doesn't really make sense. And it's always the same thing. It doesn't really start from the beginning. It gives an assumption that you have a certain amount of knowledge or a certain use case. But here's the thing that I don't understand. How is a methodology going to prioritize individuals and interactions over process and tools while deprioritizing comprehensive documentation? How are those individuals going to be empowered to do things without extensive processes if they don't have the right documentation? So I think it's not just a matter that it kind of like naively tries to balance opposites with that last statement that I view as just a gigantic excuse for a lack of accountability. But the statements themselves, there's like those of those four main tenets, you know, individuals and interactions over processes and tools, in my opinion, is conflicting with working software over comprehensive documentation. Now, I'd even say comprehensive documentation is necessary for working software, so that's got to contradict in its own line. But I think that my view of how, you know, cynical and hurtful the software industry became as my perception was that, you know, creativity kind of left the building when the majority of code was downloaded from frameworks and packages and not written in-house. But I think what actually happened was that there was just tremendous inspiration from software. You know, the late 90s and into the early 2000s was such an inspirational time that I think everybody put their hopes and dreams and possibly fears in software in a way that really made it something more than it was. And I think the nuts and bolts of practicality of build it structurally correctly, you know, walk before you run, I think these things went out the window, and I think the Agile Manifesto was kind of the narrative for that happening. And at the same time, continuous integration and writing documentation would put me in such a better position now, because had I been documenting my system, had I been completing cyclic versions of the system, I would have been able to show people and gather inspiration, quite possibly gather enough crowdfunding donations, and quite possibly have a company right now instead of recording this by myself in my bedroom. And so, as you can tell, I have such an aversion to the Agile Manifesto, the Agile methodology, and then I'm kind of looking back at the success we had at companies being like, you know what? There actually was something there. So here's how I would amend the manifesto, if I may be so bold. So I think the individuals and interactions over processes and tools would flip around, actually. And it would be, we build processes and tools that empower individuals through interactions, processes and tools that increase individuals through interactions, not decrease. Working software with documentation that helps it work. And the last two, customer collaboration over contract negotiation, that actually turned out to be a very minor role because a number of developers that I knew were in-house. This was because software originally was externalized in the early days. Respond to change over following a plan. That I would leave there because it's awesome. So that's my sort of sidewindy take on things. But I do believe that the practices that I have now developed, I have also moved outside of the C language and outside of Seneca for a minute into Python, which is what Polyvinyl is written in. And the velocity is great in part because, you know, I'm writing Python instead of all my own custom C stuff. But I think this idea of a complete cycle that involves customers, in this case, you know, my customers are the internet at large, see if I can, you know, drum up excitement. And then documentation to explain how it works and, you know, some visuals and tests. And tests came much later than this manifesto, but unit testing, I think, has been one of the single most valuable developments in the software industry in the last 20 years. Having that cycle completed is what I would say is the good parts of Agile. So there you have it. Agile, the good parts, in the spirit of a book that I really didn't and still don't like that much, which was JavaScript, the good parts. I guess I'm still waiting for the day when I can do the fancy stuff, which is crazy research and development project where I can rebuild something amazing. But it's got to happen with the consistency that Agile has. And also, to be fair, closures in JavaScript can get pretty nasty. So if this is interesting in any way, or if it's not, and you think I'm capable of better, and you want to tell me to knock it off and record something else in these podcasts, head on over to comparebasic.com and get in touch with me in the team section. And I will see you next week.